Would you like to work closer to home, save money on gas, and be rewarded for your hard work and attendance? Then Bellisio Foods is looking for you. That's right, Bellisio Foods is now hiring for multiple positions and shifts with great employee benefits, an on-site health clinic, competitive wages, and advancement opportunities. Bellisio Foods is a company that truly values their employees. Apply online at bellisiofoods.com/careers.
At Vinton County National Bank, we believe in supporting the areas where we live and work. Now, we'd like to honor those who also serve our communities. Our new Community Champions account is especially for first responders, veterans, active military, and anyone employed in the fields of healthcare or education. This account offers rewards, discounts, and other benefits to those who give so much to others. Vinton County National Bank, rewarding those who serve.
Well, good morning, everyone. Happy Monday, and welcome to another edition of The Morning Show right here on Main Street TV. And as you can see, I am not Jennifer Ratcliffe, who normally hosts the show. I am Jeremiah Shaver. I'm a journalist with The Telegram. And joining me here at the table is Telegram editor Pete Wilson. And today, we are doing the morning news update brought to you by Nia Henry, an agent for Appalachia Realty. If you're looking to buy, sell, or have any real estate needs, give her a call at 740-418-4135, and she'll be out working for you. Pete, happy Monday, and it was a busy weekend, sir.
I'll tell you what, it certainly was. I think once the weather warms up, or even if it doesn't warm up, once you turn the calendar and you get into the middle of March, and then even more so April, and then May, it is, if you work at a local newspaper and you're trying to cover the community, it is very busy. And you're right, it was busy this weekend. Some things we knew were going to happen. And as it always is in the news game, some things we don't know that's going to happen. And, you know, we try to cover, which, you know, you're going to talk about here in just a moment. Mm-hmm. And I can also tell you on what I know will happen. We have an extremely busy news week coming out. So, you know, we're getting ready. This might be the only time we're sitting down.
That's right, Pete. It seems like, you say, get into these warmer months, April, May, June, July. Mm-hmm. It's just a busy time in the news world. In May, we'll have festivals coming up. We've got mm-hmm. the Wild Turkey Festival and the Festival of Flags. Plus, you have all the local graduations happening and proms and just other events happening in the community, and not counting anything that may break in the community, like we had Sunday, sir, in Wellston.
Right. Well, you led yourself right into what is our main story in the news right now.
So I heard some chatter Sunday late. It was probably Sunday afternoon. I heard some chatter about something going on in Wellston, and went to check it out, and it turned out to be a standoff between police and a male suspect. And here's one of the photos that I captured, where you can see law enforcement out on the street. They are standing, this is North Indiana Avenue in Wellston, and they're standing along the street just up the road to the right of where they're standing. It's a mobile home where a male suspect had barricaded themselves inside the residence. And The law enforcement at the scene had previously indicated that a man had barricaded himself in the mobile home and a standoff had followed. Allegedly, police were called to the residence after a criminal complaint was reported. And that standoff between police started, it was mid-morning Sunday. And as a result, the Edgewood Manor of Wellston Nursing Home, which is located nearby, and you can see some of the cars parked there. That's staff cars there, Pete, that are parked in addition to law enforcement, was on a lockdown status during the standoff. And that standoff did come to an end yesterday evening, Pete. Wellston Police Chief John Robson told the Telegram that as officers were preparing to make entry to the residence at approximately 7.05 p.m. on Sunday, April 21st, the suspect in question took his own life, Pete. And as we know from earlier in the day, the man was believed to have been armed with a shotgun, and they had been negotiating with the suspect over the phone over the course of hours. And Robinson said no one else was injured during the event, and that police had obtained a search warrant to enter the residence. And the address there, and I had this confirmed with him, it was 407 North Indian Avenue in Wellston. Chief Robinson told me late last night, it was probably 10:30 or so, that he would be touching base this morning to get us a complete report and picture of what took place and what led law enforcement to that residence.
Okay, well, that is a very good rundown of what we know. Certainly want to thank you on a Sunday after already having a busy time covering a pageant on Saturday evening. That's just the way it is in small towns. You cover a little bit of everything. You went out, volunteered to go out to see what we had there. It could be something really critical, serious, like this did turn out to be, or it might not have turned out to be much anything other than a scare. But, you know, you went and did that. We were able to get some coverage out on our website and on Facebook. A lot of people, of course, especially in Wellston, in that neighborhood, wanted to know what was going on. A lot of questions. So, you know, we answered what we could. Had a little bit more information last night that was posted last night. We do expect to hear more from Wellston Police Chief John Robinson a little bit later today about some details, you know, that either could not be released initially or there just wasn't time to release them. So we'll be telling you about that. But obviously, you know, you got to feel for everybody involved in this, the law enforcement officers out there. You know that the male suspect is armed. He's a threat to others and maybe to himself, the way it turned out. And the idea is to resolve it peacefully if you can, with nobody getting hurt. And so, you know, that's why you have a standoff going on. You try to end it peacefully without, you know, forcing anything where, you know, there might be a bad ending for somebody. And they obviously tried. They negotiated with the, if that's the right word to use, with the suspect for hours and hours and hours, hoping to work it out. And, you know, it just didn't. And the way it worked out, from what we were told by Chief Robinson, is the suspect ends up taking his own life. But, you know, we'll hopefully get some more details. And, you know, as soon as we know them, we'll pass them along. But yep. You can go to thetelegramnews.com and get the information that's known out there right now.
Very true. Covered a lot of these over the years, and you never know what the outcome's going to be.
No, you never have. We remember what happened with the sheriff's office just January 2023 that led to the death of William Beach. That was not a hostage situation, but that was a situation where Mr. Beach was allegedly barricaded into a mobile home out there on Jisco West Road. They thought he was armed. He had maybe said some things reportedly, to where he, you know, he wasn't going to come out of that trailer.
I think he was in a small structure.
Yeah. A small structure. And so, when the law enforcement officers were attempting to make an entry there, that's when Mr. Beach was shot by law enforcement officers. He ended up dying. Of course, that was investigated for a long time by the Ohio BCI,
Every year, wouldn't it be?
Right, it was a long time. It was about a year. We always wondered why it was so long.
Right,
but it was what they called an officer-involved shooting. Many more of those than what you might imagine. You know, if you look at the statistics with the Ohio Attorney General's office, but the end result was, I mean, it's sad whenever it ends that way. But the end result was that the deputy who was investigated for a possible wrongdoing was cleared when the grand jury returned what they call a no bill, meaning that they did not even indict him, let alone convict him.
Right. And then you have other situations like the one in the fall where the individual did surrender and come out of the trailer there on State Route 93. And so it just, you know, we've seen it all, So to move on, we'll talk about the WTF. Pete,
mm-hmm.
The Wild Turkey Festival. And over the weekend, we had two pageants on Saturday. And I got to go to one of those. First time I've ever been to this one, Pete. And I tell you what, it was a show.
Right.
Quite a show.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Wild Turkey Festival Committee tries to have an outstanding show for the girls and for the public. It's always 2 weeks before the festival, and I guess they did it again on Saturday night. You were there firsthand.
I was. So the Vinton County Wild Turkey Festival, and it held its, it, I covered, it was the Queen Scholarship Pageant that involves your high school-aged girls, and that was on Saturday evening, April 20th. The pageant was held there inside the cafetorium at Vinton County High School. It was a packed crowd. And the pageant, it was quite a show as it lasted over 3 hours and featured 13 young ladies competing. The contestants included, and if I mispronounce any names, I apologize. And Dylan threw up a picture there. And guess what I don't have with me? I don't have my notes with me to be able to tell you the order of the girls up there. So I'm going to say in no particular order because I forgot to grab my notes because I wrote down on another sheet of paper, Pete, that is somewhere that I need to find the order for these girls because they're not in order per what I'm going to say, okay?
All right.
For anybody watching on the TV. So the contestants in no particular order, there's the 13 on the screen for those watching, is Emma Maynard, Devin Farley, Carissa Brisker, Zoe Sowers, Caitlin Steckman, Aubrey Renee, Grace Workman, Riley Bob, Joyce Lynn Taluni, Jessica Wells, Cassidy Graham, Justice Atkins, and Linda Mayers are the contestants that competed. You can see them all there in their evening grounds. I was able to get this picture before they took their leave off of the stage. This was nearing the 3 hour or so mark, Pete, of the pageant. And as the MC for the evening put it, it was Dr. Cassie Rice Spencer, who was the 2001 Wild Turkey Festival Queen. She was the MC for the evening. She told the girls after this picture, "You can go put your sneakers on now, ladies." So it was a long evening, and each of the young ladies underwent three wardrobe changes over the course of the pageant. The contestants began in the cocktail style dresses, then they changed into a fun outfit that was a tribute to Barbie, which was fun to see. You had all kinds of royalty doing different spins on Barbie, all the way from the all pink outfit to the workout spandex, the retro colored, it was something to see, Pete. And then the evening wrapped up with the evening gowns, which you had just saw the picture of. But the pageant is held to determine the queen and the two runners up. And those results, though, will not be announced until the crowning, which will be at the festival on Saturday, May 4th. Additionally, the 2024 Queen will receive an automatic bid to the 2025 Miss Teen Ohio USA pageant. And that was something I learned on the program, Pete. And I don't know if maybe that's why the pageant's so long and they go through all those different changes. Maybe it's kind of to get them into that or to prep them for that. Some other news that came out during the pageant that we had. Don't have a picture for this, but want to mention it. Again, the Vinton County Wild Turkey Festival Committee announced Gina Willis as the Grand Marshal for the 40th Annual Festival. Willis is the owner of Bud's One Stop in MacArthur. Another announcement that came out was Shannon Gillen Allman, who was the 1994 Wild Turkey Festival Queen. She received the 2024 Wild Turkey Festival Queen of Queens Award, and here is Ms. Allman. She got this award 30 years after being crowned, Pete. So that's pretty neat. And another announcement during the pageant we can discuss was we had a couple scholarships that they gave away during the pageant to former royalty members. You had 2021 Vinton County Wild Turkey Festival Queen Lily J. John and 2022 Vinton County Wild Turkey Festival first runner-up Ella Clancy each received scholarships. And you can see Lily and Ella there side by side posing for a photo. J. John received a scholarship for $1,550, while Clancy received a scholarship for $1,050. And it, on the terms of scholarships, which they do a lot of different scholarships during the course of this pageant, Pete, to the different royalty, Wild Turkey Festival Queens coordinator Chris Cram announced that since it was the 40th year of the festival, he was adding a new scholarship to the pageant. The scholarship will be $250 annually, and it will be entitled the Wild Turkey Festival Chris Cram Award of Excellence. The winner of the scholarship will be selected by the Queens Committee based on how well the contestant performs and presents themselves from orientation through the festival. Chris said that, you know, he's been involved with the festival 40 years now. It's probably time for him to put some money towards the festival, is what he said to those when he was on stage making that announcement. And once again, the Wild Turkey Festival is slated for Thursday, May 2nd through Sunday, May 5th. And I'm sure we'll have a complete schedule and some stories prior to then, I would imagine.
Right.
And our very own Red Thompson Jr. was at the high school Saturday morning, right? Spending some time with some little ladies, right?
Right. And this is a pageant that the Wild Turkey Festival Committee has not had for a long time. You know, they've had baby contests, and they have one for very young children called Little Mr. Gobbler and Little Miss Gobblerette.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is older girls. They call it the Little Miss Wild Turkey Festival pageant. And they had that on Saturday morning this time. Last year, they had it on Sunday, the same weekend as the Queen's Scholarship pageant. This time, it was on Saturday morning. Our man Red Thompson was there, and I'm going to pass on the information there. The format is very similar to the Queen's Scholarship pageant. You have all the contestants present themselves, and they do not name a winner. They do not announce a winner. They do not crown a winner. However, the pageant does determine who the Little Miss is going to be and who the attendants are going to be. It's just they wait until the festival, just as they do through Queen's Scholarship pageant. So here is the picture that Red took of the eight candidates for 2004 Little Miss Wild Turkey Festival, and we can give them to you in order if you happen to be looking at the picture. From the left are Brinley Clary, Paisley Harold, Olive Butcher, Brinley French, Layla Barnhart, Grayson Albright, Emily McDaniel, and Jordan Perry. These are the eight young ladies who are competing for the title of Little Miss Wild Turkey Festival. The announcement and crowning will take place during the festival on the final day. That will be Sunday, May the 5th at 2:30 p.m. And everybody will just have to wait until then to know who the 2024 Little Miss is. Of course, they had the 2023 Little Miss royalty involved in the pageant. That would be Vivian Timmons, who is the current Little Miss for 2023, and she will reign into the festival. Wrong picture, Dylan. If you can get the other one up, there she is. There you go. She's got the big crown on. That is young Miss Vivian Timmons, who is the Little Miss Wild Turkey Festival for 2023. Then the second and first attendants, if you can go back to the other picture, Dylan, it's worth showing. You have Isabella Horn, the second attendant on the left. She is giving her farewell speech, and standing beside her, waiting for her turn, I'm sure, is the first attendant, Natalie Reynolds. So congratulations to those girls. They're about ready to complete their reign. So the Wild Turkey Festival, I mean, it is almost upon us.
It's almost here, sir.
It'll be exactly. It'll be Thursday through Sunday, May 2nd through the 5th, and it will be on the downtown streets of MacArthur as usual.
Next week, sir.
My gosh, it is. We got this week and then the next week.
Oh, my goodness.
It's running. It's right up on us.
Wow.
I tell you, it was such a great show last year when we were involved more than ever because we were fortunate enough, Total Media was, to be called the Grand Marshal, to be named the Grand Marshal.
What an honor.
Yeah, right.
What an honor.
Right, to be able to walk in the parade and have honored places at the luncheon and also at the Queen's Scholarship Pageant. That was quite an honor for all of us here. And we'll always remember that. But pageant, we're going to have information, of course, as Jeremiah indicated, on the schedule, as well as the entertainment. And, of course, we've already had a story, but we will certainly underscore the fact that Jeannie Willis is the Grand Marshal of the Vinton County Wild Turkey Festival. she is being named because of the support that Bud's One Stop and that she and her late husband Bud has given to the festival through all these years. I understand she's very well liked in MacArthur and in Vinton County. All right, another big event coming up, Jeremiah. This was announced in last Saturday's paper. The Ohio Supreme Court, of course, you know, they usually have their sessions in Columbus. Well, they have a program. They have a program called Offsite Court, where they go to high schools, or they go to school districts and colleges several times a year and conduct sessions. And it gets them, you know, out of Columbus. They do actual sessions, but what it also does, it's a great learning experience for the schools where they go.
It's get firsthand, sir.
Right. Yes, exactly. And they do a lot of prep work with the students ahead of time. So, you know, they're prepped about what the court is and what it does and about the law in general. Well, the Ohio Supreme Court, leading up to this, they are going to be at Jackson Middle School this Wednesday. It is a fantastic thing for the Jackson City School District to host it. It's going to be sort of an area thing. Not only will there be students from Jackson there, but there will also be students from Wellston, Oak Hill, Christian Life Academy, and the Buckeye Hills Career Center. And this is basically going to be a morning session. It will be at the Jackson Middle School in the auditorium. And there will actually be a court session there, but they are going to set it up so the kids can have a kind of do a learning thing, an interactive thing, as well as the actual court session going on. And before this, Jackson County teachers had worked with local attorney educators, and that's attorneys in town and in Jackson County, to work with kids so they understand what the Supreme Court is and what it does. Now, two of the principal figures are right there on the front row, and they are two of our local judges in Jackson County. On the left in the front is Jackson County Common Pleas Court Judge Christopher Reagan, and right in the center with a red tie is Probate Juvenile Judge Justin Skaggs, and Justin is actually the host coordinator. He has, you know, more than anyone else, pulled it together from the local side. But, of course, it took a lot of cooperation from, you know, the Jackson school officials and, of course, the local judges and the local attorneys to make this happen. But it will start at as early as 8 o'clock when the justices arrive. You know, these are the top-ranking judges in the state of Ohio. Just like we have a U.S. Supreme Court, we have an Ohio Supreme Court. It's as high as it gets in Ohio. So they're names that maybe a lot of folks may not recognize because, you know, the type of work they do is a little bit away from the public a lot, but five very important people who comprise that court, including the Chief Justice Sharon Kennedy, will be here for that session, and it will run all morning. There will be the students will actually greet the justices firsthand when they come at 8 o'clock. Then everybody will see a video entitled Careers in the Law, and that is geared to show students, to learn students in a entertaining way about the law and how you can get involved in the law as an attorney. Then there will be a question and answer session with the students and the justices. And then at 9 a.m., that's when the justice will actually enter the courtroom and the first case will begin. The third and final case is expected to end about 10:40 a.m., so it's almost a complete morning. Once again, the Ohio Supreme Court coming to Jackson for a session that will take place most of the morning at the Jackson Middle School. If you want to learn more about that, or you know, you're just hearing about it now, we had a pretty detailed story on the front page in Saturday's edition of the Telegram, of course, online as well on our website.
It's very unique opportunity for the area students to see that, Pete.
Yeah, they don't do this very often. As a matter of fact, Jeremiah, the last off-court session when I was writing this story, I was looking for information because I didn't have a news release for a while on this, but the last session for the public school side was the Buckeye Valley School District, and that was way back in October, so that was a little time ago. They have been to Miami Trace and to Ironton in the past, so they've been in the area, but this is the first ever, I'm told, in Jackson County.
Very neat. Very neat.
All right. Speaking of schools, there was a big ceremony not too long ago, and we had it in the paper very recently, but it's certainly worth mentioning here on Main Street TV. There was a groundbreaking ceremony for the Buckeye Hills Career Center's new CDL and heavy diesel lab facility. This was a week ago. This was a week ago last Wednesday. Our Alex Shope was down there to cover it. And here are the folks doing the ceremonial groundbreaking. That actual work began in the middle of March, but this is when they could get everybody together for a groundbreaking. And it was a very nice ceremony. They had some very important folks there, not only vocational school officials and board members. And of course, remember, the vocational school, Buckeye Hills Career Center, represents three counties: Jackson, Vinton, and Gallia. So, you know, two of those are counties that we try to cover. Also, Randy Evans Construction is doing the construction work, another local angle there as well. And of course, Jamie Nash, the superintendent of the Buckeye Hills Career Center, you know, of course, was one of the main speakers, and he is making so much happen down there, along with the board and other school officials. It really, really progressive, a lot of things happening. But they were able to get a $1.5 million grant from the Appalachian Regional Commission to help get this done. The facility will be one of the largest CDL training facilities. CDL stands for Commercial Driver's License. In the region, it will boast a training space of 9,100 square feet, and that will not include the separate CDL training complex that's already there. Work is expected to be completed by the late summer this year or the early fall this year. And once again, this is another attempt by Buckeye Hills, with, of course, help from the state, from outside grant money, to provide training and education that will lead directly to these kids who are enrolled getting jobs. It's almost, you know, you get handed the diploma and then you get handed the keys to a job.
Yeah, they got a lot of different programs down there, Pete, that they've added in the recent years. Right. I know they added, I believe, an RN program not too long ago. So they just keep adding to that down there and giving these area kids more opportunities to go after different things.
Right, exactly. And I understand there's going to be another groundbreaking at the vocational school in the not-too-distant future. So a lot of good things happening there. And the best part about it is, you know, of course, you go to school to learn something, but normally your education is tied to your professional life. And so this is a direct tied to your professional life. So
yes,
we hope that that will work out and open up a lot of job opportunities, good job opportunities for, you know, our local kids. All right. There was a very notable award that took place recently in Columbus. And we thank our 4-H Youth Development and Extension Educator, Maddie Allman, for passing along this information. We knew it was happening, but we didn't have coverage on the back end. But she was there, and she wrote up a news release for us that will be in the paper very soon. But they called this the 4-H Community Service Award, and it was presented to the Jackson County Livestock Committee.
Oh, yeah. We had some back end coverage on this.
We did.
And preview.
This is coverage on the back end.
On the back end, after the fact.
This is back end coverage.
Gotcha.
To show that it really happened.
Right. We had some preview coverage.
Yes, we said it was going to happen. Yes. And now it did happen.
Very good.
And so there's a picture you can probably throw up there, Dylan. That's the 4-H Achievement Award there. This is the 4-H Community Service Award. Should be a group picture.
I'll take a look for it.
Okay. Well, I will talk about it, but Jeremiah, you can chime in here because I know you know all about this.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the bottom line is this was the Livestock Committee, which, you know, worked so hard during the fair and all around, you know, getting ready for the fair. And
over the course of the year, you
livestock projects.
Yeah.
They are being honored for the Haunted Barn Project, which is such a big undertaking, so popular. I mean, you go out there I think they usually have it during the month of October on Saturday nights. The line is long to get into that. It's entertainment, first of all. That's nice. Thank you, Dylan. There it is. That's the right one. These are members of the Jackson County livestock committee who were there to receive this award. And from the left, you have Joel Oney. He is the vice president of the Ohio 4-H Foundation. Then you have Mick Scott. He is vice president of the Junior Fair Livestock Committee. Then Maddie Allman, who is Miss 4-H in Jackson County. Then you have Jackson County OSU. Then you have Dale Gillen, who is the president of the Livestock Committee. And then David Civitolo, who is with OSU Extension. So this was a big deal. This was a state-level award. And basically, this was the Livestock Committee working hard, behind the scenes. You know, I know everybody has a good time at the Haunted Barn, but think of how much work that takes to set up. Plus, they're donating their time and labor, not only during the event to set it up, and it's quality entertainment, or they wouldn't have all those people showing up. There's so many in the Halloween season now. There's so many of these experiences that, you can choose to go where you want to go, and the Haunted Barn has been a tremendous popular attraction almost from the get-go. They call it Fright at the Fairgrounds.
Fright at the Fairgrounds, Pete, and they do put a lot of weeks leading up to the actual, up to October, they put a lot of work into this. Years ago, I used to go out and help with it some, with the construction, and even back when it started, years after it started, it used to be a tour guide-led haunted barn attraction. So you'd have rounds of, up to 10 people go with the tour guide, and we'd make our ways through. And I did that 2 or 3 years out there, volunteering my time, helping with that, along with the committee and the 4-H kids. The people that are in there scaring a lot of it is 4-H youth and FFA members that are out there helping with that. And many years ago, they changed it from a guided tour to just letting them go in groups, and they got to do their best to try to find their way out, Pete. And those dark corridors that they build in there, it can be a little challenging to find your way through, and it usually takes a little time for them to find their way to the end.
They're always putting different wrinkles in there.
Yeah, they change it up from year to year.
That keeps it fresh for the people who return
and
like that. But, it's just a... once again, I know I talk about this a lot with some of the service groups and the fire departments and all like that. It's just amazing to me that, they already do a lot of service doing what they do, but then on the side, they have to raise money to support themselves as well. And that's what this does. It makes for a better fair and an improved fairgrounds when they do this sort of thing.
Right.
So, congratulations to them. That is, remember, a state level award.
Congratulations.
Right? Absolutely. And that story, you're right. We did have a story in that they were going to receive it. But this is one where they actually did. And that has not been in the paper yet, but that's one where that we can say is coming for sure.
Very good.
All right. I tell you what, the Jackson Area Chamber of Commerce has been busy snipping a lot of ribbons.
That's what I hear.
More coming up.
Yes.
But there was one here just this past week.
I need to go check this place out, Pete.
Yeah. No, it sounds interesting. Yeah. It's right downtown. It's called Big Ben's Discount Store. Big Ben's. Ben's is a big container.
Right.
And it is at 222 Pearl Street. And it offers overstock items at deducted prices for its customers. It is family-owned. Owner is Kayla Barnett. And this family-owned business offers what they call a unique shopping experience with daily price changes that decrease throughout the week. So, it's always evolving and changing what they offer inside. This is the picture of the actual ribbon-cutting ceremony. You may recognize the building. I think that in the past, it used to be a long time ago, I'll date myself, it used to be an insurance office. But now it's the Big Ben's Discount Store. And Brian Leach was there. He is the co-executive director of the chamber. There you have a view inside there. What you have inside, the best way to say it is just lots of stuff.
Yeah.
And it will be cheaper than what it's probably going to be maybe in a regular retail store.
Yeah, so
that's what they tell me.
Yeah. So in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, Pete, I think it was last time I was there, it's been a couple years, I went to a place very similar to this called Bonanza. Mm-hmm. Ben Bonanza.
Oh, wow. That's
and it, same setup with these big bins. And it's just like just all kinds of different stuff in these bins. And I think a lot of it's like items from Amazon or whatever, mm-hmm. and they're packaged. And I don't think you're allowed to like open it, but you just sift through these big bins and like you read the labels and try to take your best guess. You never know what you're going to find in there. When I went to the one in Tennessee, I found like an iPad case for my son's iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I even found like this, it was a bubble machine that would do bubbles. It was like a octopus and it had a top hat on it. And retail, it was like $30 and I got it for $10.
Oh, my.
And it was brand new in box. And it's just a cool place. I'll have to go check out the one here locally.
Okay.
It's a neat experience to just go and dig through because it's like you're digging for treasure, you know?
No, that's right. And yeah. It's worth digging because you're going to probably save money. That's the concept.
Yep. It's a pretty neat place.
All right. Now, we mentioned this on Main Street TV on Friday, but I want to kind of mention it again because this is something we're going to have in our Wednesday paper. That's the plan right now anyway. We have already announced the valedictorians from Jackson High School. We have already announced the honor students from Oak Hill High School as well. In Wednesday's paper, we're going to profile the Vinton County valedictorians and salutatorians. There are two valedictorians, two salutatorians. We announced them last Friday, but I'll say their names again. We're going to have profiles, short profiles of them and pictures, hopefully on the front page. The two valedictorians are Michael Ramsey and Keaton Travis. The salutatorians, the second-ranking academic students, are Matthew Hembry and Evan Long. So that coverage is coming. I know there'll be special interest in that in the Vinton County Local School District. We'll, of course, have that online as well. Okay, speaking of accomplishment on the – oh, thank you for throwing those up there, Dylan. We'll have those pictures in our Wednesday paper. All right, there was a young lady who graduated from Wellston High School not all that long ago, and we have a kind of a connection with this young lady, Jeremiah.
Okay.
Her name is Cameron Carr. She graduated in 2022 from Wellston High School. So she is now a student at The Ohio State University, okay?
Okay.
So what makes Cameron so special? I'm about to tell you. She was awarded the Carolyn Kraft Special Lantern Editor position from Ohio State University. She is a sophomore at OSU, and she is majoring in journalism and political science with a minor in Spanish. She is a writer and copy editor for the Ohio State University newspaper, which is one of the best in the state. It's called The Lantern.
The Lantern, yes.
And so she will, in fact, be, there is Cameron, holding that certificate that shows that she was awarded this distinction. She will be the chief copy editor for the 2024-25 school year. And she will be, and this is special too, she's definitely a go-getter looking for experiences. This summer, she plans to attend a university in Spain.
Okay.
So great learning experience for her. And who knows where Cameron Carr may end up. She's in the news game. Maybe we'll even see her here. Who knows? But we certainly want to wish her the best and congratulate her on her success at the college level.
Yes.
And wish her the best in her very important position with the Lantern. We had an article about and a picture in this picture in our Saturday paper. Okay, Dylan, do we have the weather?
Yeah.
Jeremiah, I tell you, while I shuffle my papers, if you could go over the weather, I would appreciate it.
Sure. He's already got it thrown up on there for me today, and I was going to pull it up here so I could be all official.
He is fast.
Let me pull it up here real quick so I can read the notes, because I like to read the notes, Dylan. He likes to throw these graphics up on us, and then we got to read it and try to read it. So today, which is Monday, April 22nd, it's showing sunny, 65, with a low of 41. For Tuesday, it's showing 69, partly cloudy with a low of 48. On Wednesday, showing a 30% chance of rain, 63 degrees is the high, 34 overnight. Thursday, showing 66 degrees, Partly cloudy with a low of 40 overnight on Thursday. And then on Friday, climbing back into the 70s finally, 75 degrees, partly cloudy. And overall, this week's looking pretty good, 60s and 70s. I think I'll take that, unlike what we've had the last few days, which has been a little cold with frost advisories taking place. So,
okay, well, you know,
our weather forecast there, Pete.
Right, the weather can be changeable. You can't take it to the bank much beyond a couple days, to be honest with you.
Right.
But the advanced forecast that I saw for the next 10 days shows very little rain. So okay, that'll be hopefully nice. We had our share earlier,
yes,
in the month.
We did have our share. And hopefully the frost that we've had over the weekend is the last of it, because I'm ready to get into garden season, sir.
Right. I filed my ice scraper and I had to get it back out this morning.
I seen the wife had to scrape her window this morning on her way out as well. So.
Yes, very, very close to freezing, if not freezing.
Yeah.
All right. Another thing we want to mention before we go on to some things that happened this last weekend and that is ahead of us this week, we want to announce and also congratulate Jackson County Probate Juvenile Judge Justin Skaggs. He has announced recently a new website for his court. Now, there already is a website for the clerk of courts / common pleas court. That's criminal, civil stuff that comes through the courthouse, felony cases and so forth. The Jackson County Municipal Court, which is a very busy court, handles mostly misdemeanors. I think they do some civil stuff too. They have a website. So if you know how to navigate the website, and it's not all that difficult, you can kind of keep up with what's going on in the court as far as the cases. And there's other information on those sites too. There had not been one before, as far as I know, for the probate juvenile court. That is a branch of the common pleas court as well. And Justin Skaggs now has made it so there is one. It is... It represents the probate and juvenile court, and it is the address is www.jcjuvenilcourt.com. If you say it out, it's JC for Jackson County, and then juvenilecourt.com. And the one for probate is the same. It's www.jcprobatecourt.com. So, next time you're at the computer and you're looking for, want to see records from the probate court, they do marriage licenses, for instance. They also do wills and trusts and like that as well.
Is available on the website?
I'm not exactly sure how much information is available on the website. I would say that marriage licenses are for sure. There may be...
I was just thinking that might be a good way for us to get those, sir.
Right. Might be. I have not tested it out myself, but I just know that they have this now.
We'll check it out here.
But there's visitors can find step information on how to do. Oh, you can also file information. That's another reason, or that's another benefit that it has as well. A lot of information that you can access, and information that you can also post for communication reasons. You can. Request certified marriage records. You know, you make requests on the website as well. You can set up appointments. So, you know, so much that you can do there. All right. We also want to do, I want to do a little tribute, a personal tribute to a gentleman, and I use that word very honestly. Clarence Delver Richards died last Sunday, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday, a week ago Sunday, on April the 14th. He was 96 years old. His name was Clarence Delver Richards, but almost everybody knew him by Delver Richards. And he was a very, very nice man, lifelong resident of Jackson County. There is his picture. That was the same picture we ran on. So, but he and his wife, Betty, were very active in the community, really almost well into their 90s, actually. Just real good community people who did a lot of good things and supported things. And they were very nice to us here at the paper as well. Delver was a longtime resident, he graduated from Bloomfield High School, which, of course, there isn't around anymore. He's very active in their alumni. He was in the Army, in the U.S. Army, too, during the Korean War. Professionally was known by many people and made many friends as an agent for the Western Southern Insurance Company. and also very active in his churches, first the VG Methodist Church and later the First Presbyterian Church. Also very active with the Square Dance Club, the Jackson Lions Club, and the Wagon Wheeler Square Dance. I mean, he was known by so many people for all these activities that he and his wife were in. And so it's just a life well lived there by Delver Richards. And, capital N, capital I, capital C, capital E. He was truly, truly a nice man and a role model in that way. Just a gentleman. All right, some things that are coming up, Jeremiah, that we want to talk about. We don't have a lot of time, and we're not going to give away a whole lot. And in some cases, we really don't have a lot of details. But there's a lot of things coming up this week, and we want to tell you that the news department is going to be out there the best we can to cover all these things. Tomorrow at 11 a.m., the University of Rio Grande Community College, is going to have a very important announcement. They're going to drop a kind of like a progress report, but the main reason is they're going to announce one or two new things that's going to be at the college that the college has not had or had for a while. Hmm. And they feel that this is going to create a lot of community interest, generate more interest in the college and the community college, increase attendance and community interest. And so they are very excited about it. Alex Shope, our editorial assistant, will be down there to cover that firsthand. One of our sales representatives, Derek McManus, has been working with the University of Rio Grande on some of their activities to help promote them. And he's communicated with the news department, and he wanted to make sure that we covered it, and we're going to. That'll be tomorrow at 11 o'clock.
And that's in the village there?
That is the main campus. That is at the college, yes, where that is going to take place. The Jackson Area Chamber of Commerce is going to do a couple ribbon cuttings as well. Both Wednesday and Thursday. The one Thursday is going to be noon at the Casa Grande restaurant, which, of course, it's been open now for about a month, something like that. Very popular, but this is their formal ribbon cutting. There's going to be a big event at 11 a.m. on Friday at Manpower Park here in Jackson, and that's going to be the Jackson Community Arbor Day celebration.
Yes.
And Jackson had been a tree city, a USA for a long time, annual. And then some members of the Tree Commission, quite frankly, became a little bit more inactive. A couple of the members moved or passed away, and it just fell out of being active for several years. Now the Arbor Day Committee, the Tree Commission has been revitalized. It's very active now. And, of course, they have planned an Arbor Day celebration. There was actually one last year as well. Mm-hmm. But they're going to add apple trees to the mayor's apple orchard.
I think they already have, Pete. I keep meaning...
Is it already there?
I think they're already there. I keep meaning to tell you this.
Okay.
I was driving through, I think it was last week some point. I seen that there was a piece of heavy machinery out there and a bunch of tape up.
Okay.
Where there's, on this side of where the current trees are, the 12 or 13. And then when I come back through, all the tape was gone and the big piece of machinery was gone. And it looked like they have added another, I don't know, two or three rows, but I don't know how many trees altogether. I didn't get out the count. Okay. But I kept meaning to tell you that they have extended the orchard, sir.
Okay. The orchard apparently is already extended. They're going to celebrate that.
Okay.
The Arbor Day celebration. Yes. A lot of the Arbor Day celebrations are held on the final Friday of the month. There is an Arbor Day, that is when the Arbor Day celebration will come. It's at 11 a.m. The public is welcome. There's a limited number of trees that will be available through the Jackson Soil and Water Conservation District, apparently, if you want to get a tree yourself.
And I think they
probably on a purchase basis.
I think they just pass them out, Pete.
Oh, do they?
I covered the Arbor Day event last year, and I'm pretty sure they were just giving away certain types of little saplings.
This might be your chance to get a free tree.
Right.
Then that normally you'd have to pay for.
And I'd like to note before you move on, mm-hmm. Been doing a morning coffee news quiz, Pete, mm-hmm. on our Facebook pages.
I saw that.
Telegram News and Jeremiah Shaver Telegram News. And today's question was, can you name the community celebration that is hosted by the City of Jackson Tree Commission later this week in Jackson's Manpower Park? Pete just gave away the answer. It's the Arbor Day celebration for anybody that was wanting to know the answer. I usually wait till later in the day to mm-hmm. put that out, but I'll go ahead and announce it now.
Okay.
So everybody's invited.
Okay, yes, everybody is invited. I remember that some of the officials... When they planted the first apple trees last year, they weren't sure how they would do. They had their fingers crossed. Well, they have survived. Mm-hmm. So they're going to, they planted more.
Was it last year or the year before last?
Maybe it's been 2 years.
I think it was like right before the Apple Festival, year before last.
I think 2022. I think you're right. They did it in conjunction with the Apple Festival. That was before Arbor Day.
Right.
So,
and I think
so
even
it's been about a year and a half.
One of the trees had an apple on it.
Okay.
I think this past fall.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that, but I think I remember seeing a picture.
Okay, well, that's you can't have much better.
Unless it was like somebody playing a prank, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. You never know, I guess.
Okay. Well, some other activities this Friday, also this Friday, and it's going to be about the same time, 11 a.m. and then into the noon hour and into the early afternoon. The Jackson County Economic Development Partnership is going to have a full board meeting, and sometimes they go mobile and they meet someplace other than an office. They've met at Scotty's on First in Wellston. They did that about a year ago. Well, this meeting is going to be at the Hazlett Mansion, which is the restored old house there.
Beautiful.
As you're on Driving Park Road as you go into the fairground. Oh, it is. If you haven't been
beautiful.
In there, you have opportunities to do that. It isn't open all the time, but they have lots of events where, you know, you could attend those events and get in. And there's groups that book tours as well. But it is just beautiful what Don Morgan has done with that. But the JCEDP is going to have a full board meeting there. It's at noon. They're going to have John Hemmings, who is the OVRDC executive director. He's done that for many years, and he's retiring. He's going to be one of the speakers. Also, the director of the Governor's Office of Appalachia, John Kerry, will be there. Maybe, who knows, maybe Sam Brady will have some announcement, too. And, of course, before the meeting, there's going to be tours of the Hazlett Mansion.
Beautiful place. Four stories. I got the tour it. Last year, I think it was last year, I got to tour it in the summer. They got a special commendation mm-hmm. from a state representative up north mm-hmm. and local representative and Speaker of the House, Jason Stevens
right.
was mm-hmm. also on that commendation as well. Mm-hmm. And just beautiful inside and out. And the carriage house that goes along with the mansion, mm-hmm. it has been, you know, restored as well. And just if you get the opportunity to go and tour these, the opportunity. It's right there in the backyard,
If you have an interest in history and architecture and decor, you know, because they have obviously restored it to look like it was.
Yep.
And
beautiful.
And it's wonderful that it's saved. It never did look too bad from the outside, but it was hurting on the inside.
Yes, a lot of damage to the inside.
And Don Morgan did a great job there.
Because
it just wasn't secured. You know, people got in there and vandalized.
Tore up stuff, yeah.
All right. We want to mention that this Friday morning, another thing on Friday, we'll start at 9 a.m. at Veterans Memorial Park in downtown Jackson. The Jackson Historical Society and other local history buffs and supporters locally will participate in National Historical Marker Day, and they are going to go around and clean all the historical markers in the local area. It is an annual thing sponsored by the William Pomeroy Foundation, so it happens all over the place, but Jackson County is lucky. We have quite a few historical markers, but, you know, they're beautiful brass. They need to be maintained a little bit, maintenance and cleaned, and that's what's going to happen. And I don't think you have to be a member of the Historical Society to participate. And that's going to start. The group is going to meet at 9 a.m. at Veterans Memorial Park in downtown Jackson, where there are a couple of those markers.
Yeah, there's several of them downtown. And hopefully later this year, it's soon to be another Pete. They're going to be adding another one of those markers downtown at Veterans Park
mm-hmm.
Later this year.
Right. That's
the hopes.
That is the plan. They got some tourism money from the city to help
pay
for that. Okay, another event, I'm not done, is going to be this Saturday in Wellston. It is their big opening day activities.
Okay.
That's where they celebrate the start of the youth baseball, softball, and t-ball season. And this year, Make Wellston Beautiful, which is the operator of the recreation programs for the last year, is the way it turns out,
mm-hmm.
they are going to celebrate and honor the first Little League teams in Wellston. They think that it started in 1955. So they're trying to contact some of the players and coaches of that team those teams that still may be alive. There were supposedly four teams, and they moved it to the afternoon. It'll start with a parade in the afternoon, And then it will end, the parade will end at the ball fields there, and they will have the ceremonies, introduce the teams, and have the ceremonial first pitch and honor these little leaguers that got the whole thing started many, many years ago. And so that's open to the public, too. That is on Saturday afternoon. Okay, speaking of things that have already happened, the 70th annual Wellston Rotary Show was held this past weekend.
Did you get to go?
I did not get to go.
Did not get to go.
Red Thompson Jr. went to one of the performances, actually a dress rehearsal, when they did the whole show like real, you know, and you have better access for pictures and all like that. So we tried it that way before. I wish I would have gone because it sounded very entertaining. We have some pictures there, Dylan, I hope that you can show kind of some scenes there. But since it was the 70th Wellston Rotary Show, they decided to kind of celebrate the first Wellston Rotary Show, which was in 1947. I don't think they've had it every year, COVID and all, but they consider this the 70th Rotary Show. This is the circle picture. They're always dressed up like that in their vests, their blue vests,
gloves.
And the tuxedos, the white gloves, and the bow ties. And that's one of the musical skits that took place. They called themselves the Dancing Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so lots of music and comedy. And that is the lady who is behind making it all happen. She's not the only one, but she's the spearhead. That is Dorothy Riepenhoff, who this year turned 80.
Okay.
I'm allowed to say that because they had a big party for her, so everybody knows. Dorothy not only played the piano, which she does so well, she is the director of the Wellston Rotary Show, and people were joking that she's already working on next year's show. So
probably so.
So, I mean, a great show. That is Dana Lockard. She was the interlocutor. That is the word that is used as basically the MC.
That's a great photo.
That's what that amounts. And she sings in it as well. You can see she's very happy there, but she's been doing that now for a couple years, that very important interlocutor thing. Or position. That's Tim Jones, who was one of the end men. There were four end men, actually three end men and one end woman.
Woman.
You want to be
Kayla
Saltzman.
I almost said Lamb, her maiden name, but
right, Kayla Saltzman. You had Tim Jones, and you had Greg Sheets and Tyler Eberts.
They're the comedy relief,
right,
for the show.
Exactly. So also this Saturday, Katie King and who is the Wellston High School band director, her first year, she will have a new event called the Wellston Bandorama. It will start at 2 p.m. It will involve all the bands playing, include all of them together. That sounds like the spring fling and the band extravaganza that Benton County does and that Jackson High School does, but it works. And it's a public performance of all the bands. It's a fundraiser as well. There'll be a chicken noodle dinner, a vendor fair, a penny auction, raffles, and a dessert auction, all that taking place in conjunction with the Wellston Bandorama. All right, I don't think there's anything. Oh, I do want to say on the baseball side, we will have a broadcast of a baseball game tonight with the video, also on the Total Media Facebook page and the Total Media YouTube page, all right? Myself and Dan Morrow there will be there to call the action, and it's just not another game. It's a clash of the top teams in the league. Jackson is in first place. Washington Courthouse is in second place, and they play each other tonight.
Oh, okay.
Broadcast time should be just before 5 o'clock. First pitch is supposed to be 5 o'clock. You'll want to.
You had a game over the weekend, I believe, didn't you, sir?
We had a game on. We had a
heard
game,
you on the radio.
We had a game on Saturday as well. And
I saw you on the TV.
Okay, yes.
Dylan says, I saw you on the TV.
We get a little video there, too. That is an added element to our baseball broadcast. And so, you know, we invite you to tune in there. Be a little chilly tonight, but we should have sunshine.
Very good.
I have more in my stack, but we have reached our deadline, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, Pete, we appreciate you coming in and doing the news this morning. And Jen should be back tomorrow. And I think that is going to be it for us here on Main Street TV's morning show. So we'll go ahead and sign off. Thanks for tuning in.
Have a great day.